Ladies and gentlemen, record geeks, retired plate spinners, and millennials who want to impress their parents with their record collections. Welcome to the RhinoCast podcast, brought to you by Rhino Records. Get ready for new releases, deep tracks, and conversations with your favorite artists and bands, and balloons for the kiddies. And now, your hosts with the most, Rich Mahan and Dennis the Menace.
On this episode of the Rhino Podcast, we get a behind-the-scenes look into the new Miles Davis record, Rubber Band.
Rubber band, rubber band, rubber band.
Hey, Dennis.
Hey, Rich. How's it going?
It's going well.
I have a question for you. Have you gotten the reaction that I've gotten from folks about Rhino Insider?
Yeah, everybody that I talk to about Rhino Insider personally loves it because they're already there anyway. They're at Rhino. They're on Rhino's social media. They're on rhino.com. They're listening to Rhino podcasts. And when I tell them, you know what, you can get points. It's a rewards program and you can get great stuff. For the things you're already doing, it's a no-brainer. They sign right up. And of course, for those of you just finding out about Rhino Insider, it's Rhino's loyalty program. It's for music fans in the U.S. If you're 18 and over, you can join for free, and you get points in partaking in activities and connecting with Rhino. Then use your points to redeem for rewards. It's pretty awesome. So by engaging with Rhino on social media, telling Rhino what kind of music you like, reading articles on rhino.com, listening to this podcast, which you're already doing, watching videos, and making purchases, you get points that you can redeem for turntables, vinyl, box sets, cool Rhino swag and apparel, exclusive content, and discounts on even more music that you want to buy in the future. So it's pretty cool. Sign up today, folks. You go to rhinoinsider.com, click on Become a Rhino Insider, and then you'll get an email asking you to confirm your email address. And once that's done, you can start earning points. So sign up today at rhinoinsider.com. Dennis, what do we have today for the folks?
This is definitely the We Are Family episode because we have Miles Davis's son, Aaron, and his nephew, Vince Wilburn Jr., and we are talking about a brand new, and literally brand new because it was never released, Miles Davis album called Rubber Band.
Interesting. And were Miles' son and nephew involved in this record?
Yes. The two original producers, Randy Hall and Zane Giles, worked with Vince Wilburn Jr., who is Miles Davis's nephew, and he performed on the original album sessions. So this is one of those albums out of time, meaning that it was made back then, but it's very much brought up to today.
Well, I bet people are going to be really interested to hear why it was shelved. I'm sure you guys cover that in the discussion.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's many a tale. And the most intriguing thing about all of this is, again, this is family. This is nephew and son, and the insider stories they have about what Miles is all about are worth the price of admission alone.
Oh, this is great. Well, you know, there's kind of a Miles moment happening right now. You got the Miles documentary, The Birth of the Cool, out, and this record is out. So what fortuitous timing.
As only Rhino could bring you, this is a very one-on-one conversation. Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Vince Wilburn Jr., the nephew of Miles, Sir Miles Dewey Davis.
I am Aaron Davis, I'm Miles' youngest son.
We're here to talk about Rubber Band, and this is going to be fun because one of the things we like to do on the Rhino Podcast is cause a little controversy, you know, cause a little, rustle things up and get to the truth, and that's going to be, look at the look.
Like TMZ?
Like TMZ, yeah, exactly, like that. What I want you to do, you introduced yourselves, but I want you, Vince, to go a little deeper because we know we're going to find out a lot about what you did on Rubber Band, and you were there for the original project.
We both were.
There you go. So, but give me a little bit of back history, some things that don't necessarily come out in the mix all the time.
You growing up in Chicago, south side of Chicago, you got to picture this. Uncle Miles would come to Chicago, play Chicago, And my parents, we would go, back in the day, you didn't have TSA. You could meet the passengers at the gate. So coming from the gate back to the car, he would always get stopped. You know, I didn't know the magnitude of who he was when I was a kid. But, you know, people wanted to shake his hands, get autographs. I was like, it didn't dawn on me, like, it's Miles Davis, you know, till later on. One of the things that struck me is I would never want to be in the audience with my parents to see the performance. I always wanted to stay in the wings, you know. For some reason, I just wanted to be.
So you already.
I didn't want to sit in the audience. Yeah,
you
I didn't.
Already had that snobbery going.
Well, it was, yeah, snobbery.
You already knew.
Our publicist calls me bougie, but, you know, it was captivating to witness it as a kid. For any kid, if they're in the music, from, you know, because you get another perspective.
Oh, no,
you
I
see
know.
The band, you see the interaction of the musicians, you see the stage hands, you know, the lighting, the sound, the monitor mixer. Even back then, you know, you see all this, the workings of a concert. I gravitate towards the drums. And I don't know if it was Tony playing, Tony Williams, or Jack DeJohnette, but Tony Williams told Wallace Roney, the trumpeter, that he knew I was going to be a drummer. My mom would always make me have a haircut, get a haircut. Because I knew Uncle Miles was coming, and I always knew Uncle Miles would get me a hamburger for room service.
Yes.
I mean, that's the kind
yes.
of, a kid thing.
I had
kid
the same thing.
You know
except
what I mean?
For the haircut part.
Kids thing.
I was always trying to work that burger.
Right? And then, back then they had record guys, promotion guys.
Right, the promo guys.
So there was a guy named Granville White, Granny White, God rest his soul, that would bring the stacks of records and deliver them personally to the house. I would just go in the basement and listen to these records. And as time went on, I wanted to play drums. Uncle Miles said, Dorothy, get him a drum set. But if it's, you know, don't spend a lot, you know, get him an inexpensive kit. You know, and if he sticks with it, then I'll get him a kit. And so.
And here we are
today.
That was
it. Yeah.
So the two of you, we know we could go years about you growing up. I want to know about the two of you and your interaction. Tell me a little bit of trouble.
Uh-oh.
Because I'm not going to do, like, what was it like to live with Dad? This is not that podcast. That's a documentary in it itself. But tell me about the two of you collaborating before you were collaborating, if you know what I mean.
Well, I don't know if it was a collaboration. I mean, I would just ask him 1,000 questions. I started going on the road with the band in 1985 in the summer. I was 14, and he was playing drums. You know, it was the best thing ever I'd ever seen. Like, I just wanted to be a part of that forever. So I started working on the road crew. He would be playing and sweating, and, you know, they were cooking some song or something. He would be waving me over, and I'd be like, oh, you need something. So I'd run over there. I'm 14, right? And he would, like, give me a kiss, like this wet kiss with all this sweat. And then I'd be like, man,
look at the look
you called
on his
me over
face.
Here for that? Sometimes it would be like, you know, there would be an issue like, I need more snare, I need more Miles, I need more bass, I need whatever in the monitor. But instead it was like, come up here and get sweaty with me. I can't take this kiss with you. But man, those days, I mean, here's the guys who were in the band back then. It was John Scofield, Daryl Jones, Steve Thornton, Vince, Robert Irving III, and the dearly departed Bob Burke, who also took me under his wing, which was, I thought, was a really cool person. Man, I miss him. But man, those cats, I mean, I had Scofield showing me pentatonic scales in my room because Chief, we called Miles Chief, he would make me, he'd be like, you can't just sit around here all day. You guys have John show you something on guitar. You know, and I'm like, okay. So that was right in the transition time when they went to, he made the move, like they were touring You're Under Arrest, which is on Columbia in 85,
yes.
And then in 86, they were on to
You're
Warner
doing
Brothers.
My segue here. Thank you for this.
Sure.
Because
anytime.
Here we go. You did it well. Well done. Let's set the scene. Miles was living in Malibu.
And New York, yeah.
And New York. New label.
Yeah.
What was the tipping point? What was the reason after all those friggin' years at Columbia to go out to Warner's?
I mean, I don't know what you think, but to me, it's always that change, that need for change. You know, we've done all this stuff at Columbia.
Nothing to do with Clive, perhaps?
No, I don't know about
not
that.
Not Clive? No?
I don't know about that. I just know that if I could say, for instance, if Tommy LaPuma were to come meet with him, have dinner, and tell him what kind of stuff he wanted to do, hey, I want to get you with some young producers or whatever he was... You know, that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah. At the time, Warner Brothers had the hot acts.
I mean, if you think about it, Columbia was, you know, one of the prime entities of the record business.
Classic.
You know, it still is. But we had like three of them. Like they had Warner's, they had Atlantic, they also had all the Electra stuff.
And Sire.
And the Asylum and Sire and on and on.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a bunch of stuff.
Squiddy Politti, all those guys were Warner.
Squiddy Politti. Yeah. The Perfect Way.
He did Perfect Way, recorded Perfect Way.
Yeah. That's a groove. Yeah.
You know, it's just admiration. You know, that there are a bunch of acts, not just on Warner Brothers, but a lot of groups. Aaron, you can attest to this. They love Miles, you know? And when they found out Chief dug them, I remember when Chief recorded with Toto.
Amazing.
You know, David Page and I talked about that. But it's, you know, Aaron and I were privy in the hot seat and blessed enough to witness that. Aaron rode to the studio when they were doing Rubber Band with Hood Tapes on.
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain over and over.
It's on repeat. You remember Auto Reverse cassette deck?
Oh, yeah. I still have one.
We had a Rolls Royce that Cicely and Miles bought from their manager. A Silver Wraith 2.
How many times good?
I don't know, man. We would get there having heard it once.
They had 12
least.
Copies of the cassette.
And then we would hear it on the way back. No, he just left it in there. Yeah. It just played.
Wow. Yeah.
Remember when they had a VCRs in cars and in limos?
Yeah.
He had a Richard Pryor VCR
that
we played. He loved Richard Pryor, Sunset Strip.
So set the scene for me a little bit on, you know, first record and he's listening to all this stuff. And then you start going in to make a record with the producers. Mm-hmm. And how does that even start?
Personally, I think he wanted a pop hit. You know, he wanted to be radio friendly, and Warner Brothers was very radio friendly. You know,
but also you got to consider that his ears were not genre based or time based.
Exactly, he hated.
So it didn't matter what year it was. Mm-hmm. If he thought that the notes and the musics and the tones were weaving together, to use Keith Richards' phrase, weaving together nicely, he would just like it. So whatever was going on the radio that he liked in the 80s, right?
Yeah. He dug it.
But when you walk in the studio with the purpose of making a hit, that's always a tricky notion.
Yeah, but it's not like, you know, the concept you have to understand. He wanted to be radio and MTV accessible. So he reached out.
How come I'm not on that?
Yeah, and he'd reached out to Zane Giles, who had a string of hits at the time, and Randy Hall, who wrote Man with the Horn. And they went over to American, Ray Parker's studio, and they started the Rubber Band project.
So that was that's my next thing. Was that the studio in North Hollywood?
Yes.
Yeah. That was. American. So that was Ray Parker, where he did Ghostbusters and all the...
Mr. Telephone Man.
All the stuff.
Yeah, yes.
And was it the vibe? Was it the idea of getting a groove there?
Well, that's where Zane and Randy felt comfortable. And Uncle Miles dug Ray, you know. He wanted to be somewhere where it was comfortable, where people weren't like, oh, Miles Davis, you know.
Right. But he's not going to Sunset Sound or whatever.
Really? Huh? Did he care as long as the studio was functional and clean and operational?
Cool. Yeah.
I mean, he was recording in Van Gelder's living room, so I don't think going to any decent studio.
Any place. But he just felt comfortable around those guys. You know, Reggie Dozier.
Yeah, Reggie was the engineer, right?
Lamont Dozier's brother. It's a team.
So you get into the studio, but the concept for this record was kind of different in terms of using, and again, it wasn't quite the thing it is today, you know, blah, 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 featuring so-and-so and using, you know, guest vocalists and all of that.
They wanted Al Jarreau?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well,
on the track, they wanted Shaka. He wanted Shaka on some things, but just kept moving, you know, and he couldn't. It was going to happen, but it didn't happen, and then somehow Tommy stepped in and kind of wanted to take Uncle Miles in another direction, and reached out. I guess that's when Marcus came in and you know all that. But see. Uncle Miles did what he wanted to do when he wanted to do it. You know, he did Time After Time. He did Human Nature for Columbia. I mean, those things, you know. He never wanted to be pigeonholed, so he felt Rubber Band was where he wanted to go. We'll be right back. But it was great when we were working on it, you know? So, and he'd play it. You got to picture this, too. He'd play it at home as he was working on it, and so he'd have to replay the dailies at the house in Malibu.
I mean, he was in a... Am I right that he was in a really good place as he was beginning Rubber Band?
Yeah. Swimming at Pepperdine, you know, eating right, you know, exercising.
So the vibe was great.
Perrier.
Right? I'm trying to set the scene
here. It was a beautiful time. Malibu was beautiful. Oh, it was Aaron and I were there. And he would have the, you know, it was boxing. I call it Miles Davis University. So Aaron's room was next to mine, but Aaron had his drum set in the room, right, in his bedroom. And he was listening to some great music, some music that Aaron liked. And then Uncle Miles was downstairs with Rubber Band, and then MTV with the sound turned down. And then I'm in my room trying to go between, like, Aaron, who's that you listen to?
This is like a college dorm.
It was even hipper than that, you know.
The cool thing is he's talking about, like, how Chief would get the rough mixes from that day's session. And it would be kind of cool to get so let's say you're in the studio Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and it's Saturday now. He's got Friday's tape. You're like, can I check out Thursday's?
right.
What was the feeling? Where was there a moment where you said this is going to kill, or a moment where you said
what is going to kill
the record?
The roughs?
Yeah, the roughs.
He worked them into the show.
The show, yeah, they were
we
playing
were doing it live.
No, I know, that's what I'm saying. He was doing the songs live,
and people were digging it.
Personally, he gave me a tape, and it had the track "Give It Up" on it, and then I thought that was to me. I thought this is the coolest.
That's the single.
The coolest thing. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I played it. Then I got my hands on one of the Rubber Band roughs, and I thought, and it reminded me of something that Janet Jackson did, and I thought, this is gonna be cool, man. This is it. This is gonna be cool. The next thing you know, next time, I don't know, a few months later, to see him, he had a whole new roughs, all the Marcus stuff.
Yeah, then we had to learn all of that.
So are you saying?
So we were changing the set list. You got to. This is wow, Miles Davis. This is double right. Gemini. This is. You got to be ready for anything.
Right.
So it's hard to question. You just accepted it. And Aaron and I would look at each other like, "Yeah, Chief is onto something else." So it wasn't like you didn't have like a moment like, "Oh, what?" You know, the seas parted and shit. You know, it's like, it was a day in the life of being with Chief.
This is a theory that I just kind of popped into my head also. Let's say they had those 10 or 11 tracks or whatever it was. And then maybe, I feel like this was a Tommy thing. I feel like it was a Tommy La Puma thing. And he said, well, let's see what Marcus had. Let's see what Marcus, like, I want to put you together with Marcus. Now, I'm pretty sure that Chief did not care if there was 10 songs done and we're gonna work on 6 more.
He's just working.
They're just let me hear him. He would be, let me hear what you got. And then when Marcus played him and stuff, he said, yeah, let's do that. So they start recording that. Next thing you know, you've got an album of Marcus's and Miles' material. And that came out. So I think maybe that you have 2 albums worth of stuff and they said, let's go with it.
This is a 3-year journey to get to these 11 tracks.
Mm-hmm. Well, Greg and Rhino, Greg Brunswick and Rhino sent the tapes to Aaron and I, you know, with an idea of releasing it. So Aaron and I listened, and we talked, and we listened, and we talked, and you know, we I got to say this, we get along, and I learned a lot from my cousin because he listens to a lot of different music. I do too, but we collaborate. I'm like, Aaron, who's that? And then he'll call me and say, man, who's that? You know what I mean? So we go back and forth, and I trust his ears, and he trusts mine. So we were like, man, let's try to, we both agreed to try to bring it up to 2018, 2019, and on, because that's, we think that's what Chief would have wanted. Instead of the 80s, Simmons drums and the drum machines, and try to fuse the two, you know? And then we bounced ideas off each other. We said we should include the original producers, of course.
Of course.
Randy Hall and Zane Giles. And then we sent them the tracks, and then we started to collaborate and have the Rubber Band project of now.
Which it very much is. Which it very much is.
Yeah, man. I, and like Gary Bartz and Wallace Roney, those cats were like, man, this is cool. This is cool. You know, so you have to be in that, you know, maybe not for the jazz purists, they dug it, but they never dug where Miles was going. You know, it wasn't made for them. You know, and the fact that Ryan, and I'm going to say this is because Greg is here, the fact that Ryan, Greg Brunswick, the fact that Rhino.
Shout out.
Yeah, and no, I'm serious. And the guys got behind it. You know what I mean? They never said no to Aaron and I. They were like, okay, cool. What's the next move? Make it.
So as you're sitting there and you're trying to make decisions of what to keep and what not to keep, give me a sense of...
You know, it was the chief...
Yeah, you're laughing because it's crazy, right?
The chief was there. He was there. You know, he was there with us.
He had to have been.
He was there with us. And Aaron has a studio. I have a studio. Zane and Randy have recording studios. So it was... We know our way around the recording studio. And we know sounds. So not to pat ourselves on the back, but we kind of knew...
These are complicated for anybody else other than you.
But if you're around Chief, you know. You kind of know. If you're just coming in on a project, you
know. This is the Harvard of...
Yeah, we know. Yeah. We knew, you know, and you know, we bounced it off each other. It was a collaborative project steered by the Chief with Aaron, you know, myself and Zane and Randy. And then anybody that came in was like, that was it. That was like sprinkles. You know, we were at the Village. Aaron had a room at the Village, Jeff Greenberg, the Village Recording Studios. We were comfortable wherever we worked. Aaron and I talked 3-4 times a day. Then we ran in, and then we get conference calls, and Greg. It was like butter. It came into play. Reggie Dozier, the original, you know, engineer.
Yes, of Lamont.
God bless him.
Yes.
You know, God bless him. We would run things off of him and Steve Halquist, another engineer. I talked to Ray. You know, Ray lives 10 minutes from us. Ray from me, and Ray put his input in. And then Randy had some ideas. It was great. It was great, you know.
Let's talk about Carnival Time.
Carnival Time is great. It's a great track. But for me, it makes my stomach drop because when I played in the band, I played electronic percussion, which... is basically playing an octopad of samples of percussion. And then I had to take a solo on there, and I had to take two. If we played Carnival Time, then I had to play one in that too, and I hated it. I just didn't want to play a solo on that thing. The tune itself was great. He loved playing it. It was like the crowd loved it. It was a good live track. Now I was in the band in 1990, and we were still playing it.
Wow.
Back then.
Wow.
Yeah,
he
didn't care if the song ever came out on a record. He was like, "It was good. I'm playing it."
We were doing Rubber Band before he was even released.
And the audience is just gonna. I mean, it because
years,
it's
30 years before.
And the right. audience, it doesn't matter because it's Miles. So the audience, he could be playing Do Re Mi, and the audience is gonna be like, "I'm there. I'm there."
When the beginning of Rubber Band, people were like, "Do do 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 do," and people were like, "We did it as an encore." You know,
amazing.
He didn't
care.
They didn't know what they were.
It's kind of cool if you think about it. You're just going for the experience because mm-hmm. you don't know what he's gonna mm-hmm. do.
How about CIC, Adam Holzman?
Adam was working at Goodman Music in North Hollywood as selling synthesizers, keyboards, and we needed some Randy needed some programming or some sounds, and we reached out to Adam, and Adam came over to American and brought the sounds or programmed the sounds, whatever we needed or whatever Randy needed, and Uncle Miles, this is like went on for about a few, you know, 2 or 3 days, and Uncle Miles said, "You got a passport." And he was in the band. Took him on the road. Took him to Europe. For years.
I used to set up his stuff.
Oh my gosh.
He had a Moog.
Yeah, did he?
He had a Moog. Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah, he had a PPG and a Moog. He had great stuff.
Great producer, keyboard player. You know, he's a good friend of the Aaron and I. This when Aaron and I decided to go with some modern sounds, it's like everything fell into place. And with Randy and Zane, they were way ahead of. They didn't say, "Well, it'd be cool to leave it in the 80s." Everybody was like, "Yeah, let's tighten it up. Let's open it up." You know, and so
I mean, like I think it still retains a lot of that 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh no, no doubt.
But right. I mean, in terms of when I say, you know, make it modern. In terms of the Layla Hathaways, the Lettices, the Medina Johns, you know, Isaiah Sharkey, who plays with John Mayer, he's a guitarist on some of the stuff. Randy's guitar, percussionist, new percussion. I overdubbed drums. I mean, it's like you want to keep the spontaneity and the original vibe, but just kind of like put another thing on it. I think it would have been okay, 80 sounding, but this is fresh and this is something, you know, something new and different. With the 80s bass, you know, with those sounds, which are great, like you say, great to have.
Tell me a track you got sent, and then you were saying, and I'm not telling you to say this, but that you kind of, you know, your dad is right here, like right here, as you're listening to that track.
I mean, they're all like that, but Give It Up was the one that I really connected with. I thought, this is so cool, man.
You know, when Uncle Miles took the songs from Rubber Band and put them in the show, in the set list, so people started saying, well, where's that record? Yeah. How come you all never released
this
that?
This is where I'm going.
So there was a demand for Rubber Band before Greg even sent the doggone tracks to us. You know, Aaron and I were like, well, yeah, maybe we should probably take a look at, you know, revisit Rubber Band. So that's why I said the chief was directing all the orchestrating. And Rhino sends the music. And I'm looking at some of the songs, Carnival Time. We did live. Maze, we did live.
Oh, my God.
So it's everything old. Everything experienced is new again to a certain extent.
Yeah, but you got to understand, when Aaron was in the band and I was in the band, we were doing the music, and it was never released. And a lot of times in Europe, right? We debuted a lot of it in Europe.
I mean, most of my experience is in Europe.
And so people were like getting like standing ovations for the music that was never released.
Did Miles ever, like when you're playing it live, did he ever get off stage and say, man, we got to release that shit?
No.
Maybe this just isn't the great lost album. This is just the album that took 30 years.
No, it was lost because it was both. Shut down. You know, because we didn't finish it. So it was lost in a way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we found it again.
But it's found now?
Yeah.
Is there any learning in any of this for people who are listening about making music and what it really takes to get to something like this?
Just trust your soul, right, cuz?
Yeah, I mean, you got to trust your instincts when you're working on music. Otherwise, then you're just trying to either copy somebody or please somebody, or, you know, you got to just trust your instincts. Sometimes your instincts are to copy somebody or please somebody, but whatever, you just got to go with it.
And I trust him, you know, because he's not only my cousin, he's Miles' son, and he's got great ears and he's a great musician, you know, in his own right. You know, really. you gotta keep this in. As when I used to knock on his door and ask him who the hell was that on that band, and I'm not a heavy metal cat, but I had to know. Because I wanted to know.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't only like metal. I mean, I would go to his room and take his guy tape, you know, Teddy Riley and Guy, take that, it's practice with that, put it back, take a Cameo tape, practice that, put it back. You know, I was playing with everything. But I will tell you this really quick. On Wrinkle once, there was a guy in the band named Foley who was a very funny guy. Like, he was a great player. He called it lead bass. It was a kind of a four-string guitar sort of thing. But he thought it was funny that I liked Metallica. I would play him this stuff in the bus, and we would laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh about it. And then one day, for some reason, he got them to all play this one part of a song called Damage Incorporated by Metallica into Wrinkle. And I thought they were joking around, like at rehearsal. And I was like, nah, that's great. Don't, you know, whatever. And they did it that night at the coach house in San Juan Capistrano.
What did Chief
do? And then Chief, he blamed me. He said, did you rehearse the band? And I go, no, they did that. I didn't do that. But he thought it was funny. He wasn't mad about it, but he was like, did you rehearse the band? And I'm like, no. And I wasn't in the band at that point. I was still on the road crew. And I was like, oh, my God, I would never do that.
See, listeners never knew about that. Fans never knew about that. But that's what, you know, that's the life. It's the man, the legend.
I bet you can't say this.
My dang.
What a colorful, fun conversation you had with Vince and Aaron. Sounds like you guys had a great time talking about Rubber Band.
Yeah, well, you know, there's nothing like family to tell the truth and to tell the best stories.
You get the behind the scenes. I'm sure they saw sides of Miles that he didn't show to people outside of that circle.
Yes, and now we all know it.
Thanks very much for tuning in. Don't forget to listen and subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss the next Rhino podcast. Executive producer for Rhino Entertainment, John Hughes. Produced for Rhino Entertainment by Pop Cult and Rich Mahan Promotions. All rights reserved.